from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining us and hitting the subscribe button. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen, and joining me, Mario Draghi is still contemplating whether to accept his friendship request on Facebook, Yochai Elam. How you doing, Yochai?
Hi, Lior, I'm doing great. Yeah, me and Draghi are becoming friends. Well, at least it's a one-way friendship, but he's supplied so much drama that...
So now he's your new BFF after today's big announcements and big news that he provided us. So
yeah, all hail Draghi, king of volatility.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to cover. And as you suspect, this week we'll talk about the latest news and developments from the ECB rate decision. And also we'll talk about the recent news and from gold and oil. So before we'll dive into the latest news from the ECB, gold, oil, there are a lot of things on today's agenda. Let's kick off the show with Yochai. You said that there are some ways where traders and investors could avoid over-analyzing their strategies, right?
Right. So, well, a more common problem is actually jumping into trades without thinking too much, but others have the opposite problem. They get into analysis paralysis. That means that they analyze too much before acting. It doesn't guarantee better results. It guarantees more confusion. There is a fine line between analyzing and over-analyzing. So here's what you can do to shorten the process, keep it organized and straightforward, and I think eventually also improving the chances of winning. Too many traders stick their noses to the screens for too long, trying to analyze, verify, double-check, reanalyze, add indicators, remove them, adapt to market conditions that have changed in the meantime, reanalyze, and rinse repeat over and over and over again.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of mouthful for traders and investors to do in one single bounce. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
Sometimes it comes from underconfidence or other reasons. And when these traders do eventually place a trade, is that the perfect one? Was it worth the effort? Probably not. Some will come to the conclusion that they didn't do enough checks and will find themselves working even harder next time, diving deeper into the charts. Others could be discouraged and will try just the opposite approach, going by the gut feeling and acting spontaneously without any indicators. This isn't productive either, that's what I've mentioned before. There has to be some kind of middle ground. Okay, so how do we try to find this kind of middle ground?
Yeah, there's gotta be a better way, right?
Yeah. Well, there are lots of shades of gray. We just need to find the right one, not go for the black or the white, right?
All right, So what are the basic frames that we need to do?
So most traders already have a system, and you've seen something interesting in the charts, and you act according to the system, place a stop loss, take profit, all this. So one useful tool is to have a checklist. Use a checklist to see if a trade opportunity matches all the criteria of your system, including the risk-reward ratio, the management, the money management, which we talked about last time, and anything else. Everything should be on the list. If conditions aren't met, just let it go. Don't look for a position that isn't there. As we know, this can have dire circumstances as well. Especially if you win the specific trade, it could encourage a euphoric feeling, and you constantly break the rules, think you're invincible, and eventually wipe out your account. But if conditions are met, make a quick double check just to verify the exact checklist you use for your system. Don't omit any important condition, and don't add any extra indicator. Just repeat it quickly, make sure that you didn't overlook anything the first time around, and place the trade. Go for it. Just do it. I think this approach is a good balance between serious analysis and a practical approach. So I think we'll have to hear comments about this, about what is your process of preparing a trade. Are you organized, disorganized, too organized? How do you approach trade? We'll love to hear that in the comments on Twitter and Twitter everywhere.
Yes, so that's very interesting. And as you said, when it comes to these kind of trades, it's also very important to follow through, as you said, when a strategy and sometimes it doesn't necessarily pan out as you expected, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the trade is wrong or that the direction is necessarily wrong, because you have to have a better, a wider sample in order to make a better decision and to contemplate whether or not it's the right move or the wrong one. These are very interesting ideas. And as you said, investors and traders that want to hit us up on Twitter, you can also use the hashtag MarketMoversPodcast and give us a buzz in our website in TradingEnergy.com or ForexCrunch.com and give us a comment how to avoid this analysis paralysis, as you said. Wow, nice play on words. So that's cool. So we have that. And speaking of play on words, we have the ECB, ABS. We have a lot of initialism to go through today. So there was a busy day in the markets with the euro, falling down by roughly 1% or even 1.1, dwelling near to the 1.3 mark. And it's been a long time since it went all the way there after the euro, after the ECB's recent rate decision. So can you fill us up with the main details from this recent ECB press conference?
Sure. Well, as you said, the ECB did a lot. It's not only words and initialisms. This time, it's a lot of action. I must say, I was surprised. I guess also the markets were, that ECB just ticked all the boxes, just did everything. So actually, the initial move began with the report by Reuters that the ECB plans an ABS program of 500 billion euros. That had a small impact, and then came the real news. The ECB at first announced a cut of the rates. Now, how low can you go? Well, even lower into negative territory. The deposit rate, which was already at minus 0.10%, was lowered to minus 0.20%. The main lending rate was cut from 0.15 to 0.05. It's really low and small fractions. I'll just mention that Draghi later mentioned that now rates have reached their lower bound. Well, there's really nowhere lower to go. But that wasn't it. At the press conference, president of the ECB, Mario Draghi, announced an ABS program. He didn't talk about the size. That will be detailed in October. The actual asset-backed securities, ABS, these purchases will begin in October after the details will be revealed. He did say it'll have a sizable impact on the balance sheet. And he said regarding the decision that the council was unanimous on the unconventional measures, but it wasn't unanimous on the exact decision. That means the Germans wanted less action. But that is a bit irrelevant to what happened in the markets.
But they wanted, when you said about the action, do you mean about the size of the ABS or whether or not how to implement it or what exactly are you referring to?
Well, it's a great question. And the reporters asked that and he ditched the bullet. He didn't say which countries, of course.
So he didn't say anything in regards to whether or not... So it was unanimous, but you don't know exactly how unanimous was it in regards to the size of the ABS or how to implement it. All these minor details, if you will, remained in the vague, so we don't know exactly how it's they're going to play out.
Yeah, so it was unanimous on the intent, but not on the exact action. And Draghi said there's no contradiction. Oh, well, but that matters less to...
Yeah, he's such a wizard and with words, this guy.
Yeah, he's a genius. It's not even his mother tongue, but he likes to play with words in English, and the market likes it as well. Lots of volatility. So at the time of the recording, I see that euro dollar is dipping under 130 once again. It happened also during the press conference. During the press conference, it just took out some stops and bounced back up, especially when he said that rates reached their lower bound. But this was only temporary. I think... don't know when you're listening to this recording, but I believe that this decision, with all the new action, just 3 months after the huge June decision, will mean that we'll have a big impact on the euro for quite a long time. A negative impact. We'll have to see, of course, the details in October, but it's big.
Do you think it's going to be such a prolonged adverse impact and will keep the euro dollar at 1.3? It could bounce back. I mean, it happened in the past when they even had such a monetary expansion measures. That's the main question, whether or not you think the euro will remain at this low level.
I think it can fall even further. Yes, of course, there's a chance of a bounce. Euro dollar has been falling in the past 6 or 7 weeks without stopping. Everybody's expecting a bounce. Perhaps the non-farm payrolls, if it'll be a small miss, they'll serve as the excuse for a bounce, or perhaps any other figure or political announcement next week. but the general direction remains down, with the Fed about to tighten and the ECB announcing more steps. The monetary policy divergence is the big picture, and the big picture points to a weaker euro dollar.
Yeah, so that's interesting. And when you said about these unusual measures, I think the ECB is a little bit late to the game. I mean, you're saying ABS is a unusual measure, monetary measure. I mean, come on. We're in the world where the FOMC has been had the QE programs. Bank of Japan had QE programs. So it's these kind of measures are relatively so unconventional, I think, in this day and age. But for Europe, obviously, it's something that it's pretty new. As you said, it looks like it's going to go in this direction of going down, with the FOMC going a little bit more hawkish and the ECB is going more dovish. So these measures should have a downward trend. But on the other hand, the inflation reports, for instance, you still see Europe is pretty struggling, and the inflation remains pretty low compared to the US. I mean, and the US is bouncing back, it's strengthening, the economy is strengthening, and so these are also some things to consider, that if the Europe remains in such a vulnerable position, also the ECB made changes to its forecast, right? The forward forecast for the economic indicators.
Yeah, the ECB has a mandate to reach a price inflation level of 2% or a bit below. It's been more than a bit below for almost a year, since October last year, falling to 0.7, hardly bouncing back, and reaching 0.3 in August, according to the preliminary figure. Now, there is some encouragement from the fact that core inflation has ticked back up to 0.9%, and some countries are seeing better signs of growth, but the general picture is that the ECB is not fulfilling its mandate. And I think the Eurozone needs a weaker level of the euro, and of course, stronger growth. But one thing that can push inflation higher and help the ECB fulfill its mandate is a weaker level of the euro for a few months. And even though we had a weaker euro since May, it hasn't been enough to lift inflation from the bottom. And once inflation expectations for the medium term, from 5 years forward, have changed, this is when the ECB got to its senses, and that's what we heard from Draghi at Jackson Hole, and now he's delivering on the speech and acting.
Yeah, I understand that, but I don't buy it that the euro. I mean, it could happen. I'm not saying not. Just to tie off my previous comment, as you said, following this information about the current expectations about the GDP and the inflation, I'm struggling to see how the euro will keep at this level or even come down. It could have a bounce back, especially considering the euro is still struggling. And I think that even those tremendous measures that the ECB has been implementing in the past few months, and to be honest, since Mario Draghi came into office, he's done a tremendous work. I think he doesn't have what it takes for the ECB by itself to do what it takes to keep bouncing back the euro economy. I think it will eventually boil down to some additional fiscal measures that it's out of the ECB's reach. And I think that's the other part of the equation that will need to strengthen the euro economy. And when you say about euro economy, you was talking about first and foremost is Germany, and I think the Germans aren't expected to, and I think we talked about it in the previous show, I don't think the Germans are expected to do some big monetary more expanding measures, like taking deficit or stuff like that. They're not they're very conservative, as you said in the past show, so we're probably not going to see any measures from them. So
yeah, you're touching on a great point, because Draghi reiterated that fact again and again. He said monetary policy cannot work on its own. We need structural reforms, something he's talking about for a very long time, and we need fiscal stimulus. Of course, he was careful not to give specific advice to governments, but Basically, he was shying away from the austerity stance of the Germans, and he does say that growth is also needed for the ECB to fulfill its mandate. So we're not expecting Germany to do anything, but with these steps of the ECB and perhaps with maybe deficits from other countries or perhaps more growth from Spain, and maybe it'll reach Italy, maybe France will reform. I think we might see some kind of growth, but it'll take a very, very long time. Speaking of growth, the ECB did lower its forecast for 2014 from 1% to 0.9%. The inflation forecast was lowered to 0.6%, but the ECB does see inflation rising to 1.1% in 2015. That means that the ECB doesn't think it'll happen on its own, but the ECB thinks that these measures will help inflation pick up, and the ECB doesn't see a danger of deflation.
And the inflation target is still at the 2%, or they lowered it?
No. The target is 2% or a bit below, but the forecasts are lower according to the central bank itself. So what's the point?
That's what I'm saying. What's the point of having a target if never gonna reach it? As you said, in 2014 is gonna be what, 0.5%, 0.6%. That's nothing. In 2015, around 1%. 2016, 1.4%. Yeah. So what's the point of having a 2% target if you're never gonna reach it? That's what I'm saying. So these kind of measures, it's a little bit, blowing into the wind. That's not gonna do anything. So that's what I'm saying. He's using all his arrows in his quiver, but those arrows are not gonna penetrate this shield of stagnation that the current European Union is facing. So that's a problem. Yeah, that's I don't know how he's gonna solve it. That's why he gets the big bucks, and we're here trying to make a sense of what's going on. So
yeah, he did mention that the ECB missed its target on the upside in 2011, and it reached 3%. So what his predecessor Jean-Claude Trichet did was just raise the rates, and he basically triggered the second recession after the financial crisis. So, Trichet,
that was like poor decision for Europe, the wrong person for the wrong continent for the wrong time. It was like a trifecta of incompetence on all accounts. I mean, as long as the Europe was doing so well in 2002-03, that was nobody cared. I mean, you could have been in autopilot and would have been fine. But when the economic crisis hit, that was the wrong person to be there. So, well, they're paying for it now, I think, in a sense. But they have Draghi, who is doing a much superb job, and he's like, if he were the guy in charge back in when the crisis started, maybe we could have been, the Europe would have been in a different location. You never know.
Right. Let's just finish off with an optimistic note about Europe. I think I mentioned this in the past, but there is some evidence that the measures of the ECB are reaching the real economy. That means that lending has become more loose. I felt it on my own when going to the bank and talking about the mortgage or personal loans or loans to businesses. So I think some things are moving on the ground, but there's another problem. Even if banks are willing to lend more than beforehand, are businesses willing to invest, to take loans? That's a bigger question. Maybe we'll address it in one of our future episodes.
So just to summarize, we don't know exactly when it comes to this QE, ABS, whatever you want to call it. We know that it's going to be, you said, $500 billion, right?
No, that isn't certain. That's a Reuters report. It might come up to this sum. The ECB just said it's going to be sizable, and that Draghi, when asked about it, Draghi said it's difficult to assess the size. But we'll hear more about the size in October. The main thing to draw from this press conference is rate cuts plus ABS, plus perhaps buying government bonds in the future, Draghi sends a big message that the ECB means business, and the euro is reacting accordingly.
All right, interesting. So we'll see how these things will play out, and we have to look forward for October. It's going to be a lot of fireworks in October from the ECB, FOMC, so we'll have across-the-board kind of excitement. So
lots of fun now and more fun later on. That's the way I like it.
Oh, there we go. Now we're talking business. So speaking of fun, we kicked off the week with commodities taking a tumble down. You saw that? It started off after the Labor Day weekend. Suddenly, boom, all the screens are bleeding. Gold falling down below 1300. Oil falling down to $93. A $3 fall. Brent oil going down. Natural gas across the board. But the following day, we saw oil, Brent oil, and WTI bouncing back. So that was a lot of excitement to start off the week. And when it comes to these kind of moves on a day-to-day basis, I think it's very important not to remember that sometimes we see suddenly a sharp move, but it could be so many factors, who knows? But it's more important to take a look at the big picture, look at the forest, if you will, not at the trees, and see where the trend is going. And currently, even though there was a bounce, oil is still, I think, in my opinion, it still has more room to come down, and how the oil market will continue to develop. But let's see some of the big things recent developments that did occur in the oil market. So from the demand side, there were a little bit of some economic reports that came out in the beginning of the week. The U.S. manufacturing PMI grew to 57 from 57 to 59, so that should have been a positive reaction for oil. On the other hand, the China's PMI slipped to 50.2, which means the manufacturing is still expanding, but at a much slower pace than in the previous month. All in all, we couldn't say that there is much of a big change in the demand side, or we can't see that. So this comes to what happened from the supply side. So on this, we have what happens in OPEC and non-OPEC countries. So from non-OPEC countries, we have the commotion in Russia. When it comes to Russia, the Russia and Ukraine dispute, what's the latest news on that front, Yochai?
Well, the last thing we there was a lot of excitement in the markets when the Ukrainian president tweeted that he and Putin decided on a permanent ceasefire. Later, he had to retract that. Russia said it cannot agree to a ceasefire because it's not involved. And basically, they talked about some plan for a ceasefire, and they're going to meet on Friday in Minsk in Belarus. So Putin is actually talking about peace. He laid out a 7-point peace plan that is very favorable for Russia. And he laid it out after the rebels assisted by Russia. They may or may not be assisted by Russia, depending on who you believe, made some serious gains. It's quite unclear. There's lots of misinformation, but there is some kind of hope for peace at the time we're recording the show, but the situation is quite volatile. So it's more optimistic than beforehand, yeah.
It's still volatile, there's still unanswered questions, and there are still imposed sanctions from the EU and the US on Russia. So these things are also need to be considered, because there's a strong relation between Russia and Europe when it comes to providing oil. Russia is the third largest producer of fuels after Saudi and the US, but nearly 80% of its exports go to the European countries. So the current sanctions that the EU imposed on Russia include banning export of oil exploration equipment. So these sanctions, on the one hand, could threaten to slow down the progress of oil production, the big oil producers in Russia, which also work side by side with big oil companies such as BP and ExxonMobil. So this is why also when the feud started off and the sanctions were imposed, these companies had a sharp fall in the stock market. But at the same time, we have to remember that these are only speculations that they will have any adverse impact on the oil production in Russia, and also it raises at the same time the question of whether or not Russia will also slow down its imports to Europe, and they'll also have some more strains on the supply that they receive. So these are also things that we need to consider. As I said, at the same time, it's still very early to determine that there will be any adverse impact to the oil markets, at least in Russia, and so these measures should be taken with some with a grain of salt, or whether or not they'll have any impact, these sanctions or the current feud will have any impact on the oil market. Which brings me to the other big issues that we have. It's in the Middle East. So we have the big commotion and the still ongoing fighting in Iraq with ISIS, and the U.S. is maybe is also doing a little drone action, if you will, and there are the Kurds also in the middle. So there's a lot of commotion over there. Do you have any latest news from these fronts?
No, there's fighting going on. The U.S. is about to send more troops, officially to defend the U.S. embassy in Baghdad or something like that. So it's a big political story, of course, because of the beheading of two journalists, these horrific beheadings, the cruelty of ISIS. Is something the West does want to counter, you can tell us a bit more about the lower impact on oil prices, I think, no?
Yes, so even though, as you said, even though there's a lot of fighting, a lot of horrific events that we saw on the news in the recent weeks, it's still, when it boils down to whether or not it have any direct impact on the oil market, then we can see that, for one thing, the Iraqi oil production hasn't slowed down, maybe a little bit, but not by much. I mean, it's still around over 3 million barrels per day. So that's the average it had in 2013, 2012. And one of the reasons is that most of the oil production is still concentrated in the south, where the fighting doesn't occur. Most of the fighting occurs in the north, in the central, in the north. So there's there's not a direct impact on the oil markets. And at the same time, even there was a little bit of a news cycle over the weekend, which may have also had some short-term impact on the oil markets, but still, it's only more anecdotal than actually having an impact. And that's the Kurdish oil tanker with $100 million worth of oil trying to unload oil in the U.S. And because there's some legal dispute, there's a legal dispute with Iraq and the semi-autonomous region of Kurdistan, this means that the shipment was in limbo for over a month. So the Kurds were trying to unload and weren't allowed because of the legal dispute that there currently is with Iraq with respect to the Kurds' autonomy and a right to sell this oil. And Iraq sees the Kurdish oil deals as a smuggling and wants to block these future exports. So that's why there was a lot of legal issues. But eventually, the U.S. judge threw out a court order that would require federal agents to seize and hold the cargo for the Iraqi oil ministry until a court there decides which government owns it. So it's still at the focal point. They don't know exactly where it's going to unload or not.
Quite a lot of oil, $100 million.
Yeah. So there's that. And that story developed over the weekend, so it's still signals to the market that, hey, they have a lot of oil and it's trying to unload, so if anything, oil should come even further down. But that's more of an anecdotal. I think the big picture still sees that the Iraq is still producing oil at a normal rate. For the U.S., it doesn't mean much, as I said, because also for Iraq, oil imports account for roughly 6% in the past month. So that's nothing for the U.S. economy, for the U.S. oil market. But I will say that oil imports has picked up in the past few months, and they nearly doubled since the beginning of the year. So there's that to consider. If you boil it down, then you see that on the one hand, on the non-OPEC countries, they're still progressing at a slow pace, but still progressing. The Russia issue, the Russia-Ukraine issue has yet to have any direct adverse impact on the oil markets. It might have some impediments on the imports of oil to the European countries, but for now it doesn't seem to have much of an issue. And there's also the OPEC's oil supply that continues to remain relatively flat, and even if nothing, even picks up in the past month. Back in July, there was a slight decrease in oil production, but it picked up mostly because Libya is starting to pick up the pace again. So it reached 0.4 million barrels per day. It's still slow, and it's still very low compared to what they used to have back in 2000, back in the early 2012 before the commotion. So it's still around, back then it was 1.6 million. So still a long way to go. But if Libya will continue to pick up the pace, Iraq will remain stable, then from the OPEC oil supply, it should remain stable at around 30 million barrels per day. So the bottom line is that I think that if anything, we should see oil prices continue to keep coming down and at slow pace, but and these sharp trade volumes, you can just attribute it to a lot of the markets reacting to the news instead of looking at what the trend is going. So there's that. I think we wanted to cover up all gold, but since we talk so much, we have the ECB, we have oil, we have so many, so I think we'll sign off at this point. So as usual, thank you, Yochai.
Thank you, Yoram. Yeah, busy markets, hopefully it'll continue.
As usual, thank you all for listening. If you have any comments or questions, then please leave us a line on our website, tradingenergy.com or forexcrunch.com, or seek us out on Twitter, just the hashtag MarketMoversPodcast. If you like the podcast, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe to a newsletter on iTunes or any other option that fits you. So, and spread the good word, of course. So that's it. Until next time, this is Lior signing off for Yochai. Saving, have a great week and invest responsibly.
For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make Market Movers possible.